This is an extemporaneous prayer treatment by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute. Website is mbeinstitute.org or .com. They both go to the same website. Mary Baker Eddy is the discoverer, founder, and leader of Christian Science, and she discovered it in 1866. She gave her most advanced class, which was in 1898, her final class. Students only could attend by personal invitation from Mary Baker Eddy. And she presented to that class seven prayer treatments called Diapason of Heaven. One was assigned to each of the seven synonymous terms for God, of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. This prayer treatment will focus on the concept that she provided to her class. And when I say it's based on the concept that she presented, she confined the prayer to only a few of the terms that define mind, based on her usage of it in the textbook, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. But the founder of the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, Helen Wright, thoroughly examined the textbook and underlined each time that utilized the specific term for God. In the process of that thorough examination, she discovered that Mary Baker Eddy used 61 different terms to define mind. So this prayer treatment will look at the first one, which is action. And this prayer treatment, therefore, will focus upon how action is a primary term to define mind. And mind, of course, is a primary term of the seven to define God. When Mary Baker Eddy gave us the seven prayer treatments, they were intended to be something that was short and easy to memorize and to recite often. In fact, she states that as a part of the prayer treatment, that it should be recited often. But we're going to take a look at the concept she used and expand it with other things she has taught us in the textbook, such as what is described on page 146, which is the system of divine metaphysics, and on page 330, where she says there are 32 planks to the platform of the system of divine metaphysics, and if one understands and practices by living those qualities in both the letter and the spirit, they will be able to demonstrate the system of divine metaphysics to heal any problem that may occur. On the website, we provide a complete study program where one would be able to do just that, heal any problem that one seems to appear in one's life. The study program is under the title of Heal Everything, and there's a button in the header and in the footer, both of which are on every single page throughout the entire website. It includes detailed instructions, and if you follow that, you will find an amazing transformation in everything that touches your life. And you will also find that your life touches others in just absolutely wonderful, productive ways. This is the end of the introduction. Looking at the first term that is used, which is from an alphabetical list of all the terms she used to define mind, let's contemplate the different ways that this word action could be utilized to prepare a prayer treatment that would be very effective and very directed, like a rifle, to really knock out any apparent effectiveness of its opposite. Now, by action, we are talking about an action that expresses the mind of God, which means it must be intelligent, it must be wise, it must be made based on knowing the truth. And the first quote in Science and Health, as a matter of fact, is about truth. It is the words of Jesus which says, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." The second quote is equally important. It says, "There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so." And the third one, there are three quotes total. The third quote at the beginning of the textbook is by Mary Baker Eddy, and it says, "Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. This is thy high behest, thou here and everywhere." So the first one is straightforward. We are going to be seeking truth, and we're going to be living it to the best of our understanding. And we're going to be careful about our thinking, because our thinking creates our experience. And we're going to be grateful for whatever is revealed to us, and that means that we are aligning with the laws of God, with what God represents, and that includes his entire manifestation. When Jesus was asked, "What is the most important commandment of all?" he said, "Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. And the second is like unto it, love your neighbor as yourself." He considered those one commandment. He says, and the second is like unto it. So when asked for only one commandment, everything he said is the one commandment. The Bible also states that we cannot love what is invisible, such as God, unless we love God's manifestation, which means our neighbor and every event, everyone and everything. We're going to love it if it is truth. And if it is not truth, if it is error, then we're going to flip it and use it as a reminder. There were two gardeners. They managed estates, or the gardens of the estates, and they had an adjacent property line. The one gardener was the finest anyone could ever have. His education, his experience, and the result of how he practiced his skills were obvious in his garden being totally perfect. But the other gardener had some flaws, and he just had a difficult time having a good-looking garden. He would lose plants from time to time, and when he did, he would go over and take one from the neighbor's garden. One day, a friend of the good gardener wanted to see his garden, and so he took him out to show it. And that night before, the other gardener had decided that he wanted to have one of the plants. So there was a hole left in the ground. And so the friend of the good gardener asked him, he said, "Boy, you've got a beautiful garden, but what's going on with this hole? Are you just getting ready to plant another beautiful plant?" He says, "No," he says, "my best friend took that." He said, "Well, why do you call him your best friend?" He said, "Because he's a reminder for me to be awake and alert and always be practicing the golden rule." He flipped it. He looked at him as being a friend because it was a reminder to make sure he was going to personally, individually practice loving your neighbor as yourself. So how can action be utilized to be expressing mind? Well, one can think of premature action, overaction, reaction, absence of action, as things that we don't want to be doing. And the one thing we want to be doing is having action of good in all thought, speech, and action. the way we think, the way we talk, and the way we act. So one might formulate a prayer something like this. And Frederick L. Rawson was an expert Christian Scientist. In fact, he discovered how to go back in time and heal. He wrote a book also called Treatment or Healing by True Prayer. And in it, he has a chapter, number 4, called Applied Treatments. And he lists 1,315 different ailments. And he describes the ailment in very brief terms. And then the rest of the paragraph or two, whatever he writes about it, is focused entirely upon how to heal the apparent problem. And he says it's very important to make just a very quick statement to deny that the problem can be real. And he says use words such as this. For example, there is no, and then you name the title to the problem. And then he says, immediately shift your conversation in thought, speech, and action to the opposite. Think about God, which of course is perfect. Think about heaven. Think about God being in heaven and that we are right there with God because God is omnipresent. So we can be wherever God is because it's all mental. And that's exactly what Mary Baker Eddy recommends we do, is to have a model that we can refer to so that whenever we have any kind of a problem that confronts us, we can immediately go to that model and think about us being the individual referred to in the model. In other words, if God created man, as it states in Genesis chapter 1, starting with verse 26, in his image and likeness, we have to think about that being us because we are an individual manifestation of man. Therefore, since God in mind is intelligent and wise and knowing, then we as his image and likeness are intelligent, wise, and knowing. And so any action that we think about, we need to apply those terms that the only action that we could be involved in is an intelligent, wise, and knowing action. So, for example, if we had an accident or we observe someone else having an accident or we learn about it by watching the news or reading it in a newspaper or on a website, we can immediately say that there can be no reality in any accident, for man is governed by the wisdom, the intelligence, and the knowing of God. In fact, God is divine principle. Divine principle is balance and harmony, as well as structure and system. So the entire universe is controlled by the structure of God through divine principle as God's quality. And it is including a system which complies with that structure to make sure that every action is a perfect action. And since every action is a perfect action, there's no way that we can be outside of that situation with an action which is imperfect because God is omnipresent. So God's perfection, God's intelligence, God's wisdom, God's knowing, God's divine principle with its structure and system is omnipresent. That means that we are reflecting those same exact qualities. And that means anyone we observe is also reflecting those same qualities. So we, nor anyone else, could be under the influence of being affected by an accident, which really is an action that is out of balance, an action that includes chaos. But there can be no chaos in a realm that is heaven with a perfect God, a perfect place, and a perfect reflection, which is you and me and everyone else. So no, we cannot experience an accident, nor can anyone else. And when we think we see an accident, it is a miscalculation of what is really taking place. When Jesus was walking along the wayside and he would see someone with a problem, he would immediately translate what appeared as a problem to be seeing a perfect image and likeness of God. Therefore, there could be no action that could create whatever problem appeared to be facing the individual. It couldn't be real. And we can make the statement, there is no, and then state whatever the problem appears to be. This can apply to walking along a street and we see a stray dog, or we see someone in a wheelchair, or we see someone limping, or we see someone very unhappy, frowning as they walk. We can apply it to anything that appears to be less than the perfection of God in one's situation. And we must do it in an impersonal way, because God is not personal. In fact, it states in the Bible in the New Testament that God is too, in fact, in the Old Testament under Habakkuk, it states that God is of purer eyes than to behold evil. And also in the New Testament, it states that God is not a person and he is no respecter of persons. In other words, God doesn't deal on a personal or a personality level of thinking. God deals in ideas. God could not be omnipresent if he's confining himself to something that is finite. And we must also remember how Mary Baker Eddy interprets the Lord's Prayer, the very first sentence, where Jesus gave it to us as our Father, which art in heaven. Mary Baker Eddy translates that to mean, looking at it from the spiritual sense, our Father, Mother God, all harmonious. So where Jesus says, our Father, she says, our Father, Mother. And when he refers to heaven, our Father, which art in heaven, she refers to it as our Father, Mother God, all harmonious. In other words, being harmonious is heavenly. That's being in heaven. If we're going to be chaotic, that's the opposite. And if we see chaos, it should be a reminder for us to flip it to the truth, to be watching our thoughts, as Shakespeare cautions us about. And Mary Baker Eddy reminds us by putting it all together, oh, thou hast heard my prayer. What is the prayer of God? It's the qualities of God. I had a longtime friend that was an excellent practitioner, and she said, qualities, qualities, qualities. All is qualities. You notice I said all is and not all are qualities. And why would I do that? Did I make a mistake in grammar? Having a plural subject and a singular verb? No. Mary Baker Eddy says alway instead of always. She's referring to the unity of everything being connected. There is nothing isolated in the universe of God. Everything is connected in one grand network. This is because God is omnipresent. So all of his laws, all of his manifestation, every one of his qualities is omnipresent, and they're all interconnected. Just as was explained in an example in this prayer treatment, where we must be intelligent and wise and knowing in order to properly evaluate our viewpoint if we are confronted with an accident. We need to be wise in listening to what Shakespeare tells us. There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. How are we going to think about something that is trying to present chaos? Something that is totally out of balance? Something that is lacking coordination, cooperation, coincidence, simultaneous harmony? The word diapason means compound concord. And that's the way we have to look at everything in existence, as being one grand diapason, one grand compound concord, where everything is working together, everyone is harmonious working together, because everyone has the same common goal of expressing the qualities that are needed to bring whatever project they're involved in to a successful conclusion. It doesn't matter what part anyone plays in the procedure, there is one common goal, and that is to express to the highest quality that one understands of performing their particular talent in doing the task that is before them. There was a high school coach that was teaching a group of girls that were running the cross country, and they never won the championship, and the parents thought that there was the capacity to do it, but they just didn't have the right coach. And they hired this gal, expecting great things from her. And they were very disappointed when she started training them, because they weren't winning any meets. And what she was teaching them was not to win, but to run the race not based on what others were doing, but on what the principle was on how to run it correctly. And she knew that they needed to build up their endurance and their strength. So she practiced on doing exactly that, not on speed, but on endurance and strength, being able to persevere and endure the cross-country distance, which was about 3 miles. She taught them to run the perfect race, not a race based on anyone else on the track. She said, don't even look at them. You don't care whether they are in front of you or behind you or beside of you. You focus on the perfect race. In fact, the name of the movie is Remember the Goal. It was so successful that they did 2 more. Very excellent movies to remind us that that's exactly what we need to do in everything in our life. I mentioned Frederick L. Rawson before, and that's exactly what he did. He perfected every activity in which he was involved. He was a sportsman, and he was involved in various kinds of sports. Everyone he excelled, because he was working on not beating someone, but on overcoming the distractions from running or whatever the skill was in being involved in that particular sport. He was focusing on perfecting his performance in relation to what the perfect principle was for that particular activity. We must remember that we are a part of the big picture. We have a video on the website called How Big Is Your Problem? You can find it by just going to the menu. It's only about a minute long, and I highly recommend it. It is a beautiful video, and it's good to watch that on some kind of an intermittent basis, maybe once a month, because it helps us really focus on what is the quantity, the size of anything that seems to be a challenge. There was a professor, and he wanted to teach his class about the importance of where your focus should be. So he took a large white sheet that had a little black dot right in the middle, in the epicenter of it. And he hung it up across the viewing area. And he said, "What do you see?" They thought he was crazy. "Well, what do you want us to see?" "We see a white sheet." They all kind of spoke in unison. He said, "Look carefully." And then one student noticed there was a little black dot right in the middle. "Oh, you want us to see that little black dot? That's what you want us to focus on." He said, "The first part of your sentence is right. We want you to see it. I want you to see it. But focus on the big picture." He says, "You have to solve that little problem because it can cause you big problems if you ignore it, because it will grow into becoming more and more important. So once you know there's a problem, your focus must be on solving the problem so that you can get back to focusing on the big picture." Perspective is what vision is all about. Discernment. Do we know the difference between right and wrong, between truth and error, between perfection and imperfection, between intelligence and ignorance, between matter and spirit, between a true identity and a false identity, between principle, which is always harmonious and balanced, and chaos? Do we immediately, when we see something that is a problem, do we deny that chaos can have any place in our life or in the life of anyone else? Do we just very simply state there is no chaos, there is no accident, or whatever the problem seems to be? How about bad weather? Mary Baker Eddy had her students that were living in her home, which went through a vetting process. She made sure they knew how to handle the weather. And when there was any inclement weather that was coming up, she would put them to work. There wasn't any reason for her home to be interrupted by weather. I used to live next door to one of the most famous weathermen. His name was Crick. And he determined what day, and this is a sad event because it's about World War II, but he was to determine what day would be the best for America and its allies to make an invasion. And they wanted the weather to be whatever they specified. He had such a knowledge of the weather that he could create the weather by cloud seeding. And of course, that's what's been done ever since. This was, 75, 80 years ago, he was doing this, back in the mid-1900s. World War II was, we were involved in it starting around 1941 to, 45, I guess it was. That's what the history books indicate. Is there any reason we should suffer from weather? Jesus went to sleep in the ship to take a little rest. And while he was sleeping, a big storm came up, got the disciples all worried. They went to where he was in the ship and awakened him. He said, "Master, don't you care about the weather? We're about ready to be capsized here in our ship." All he did was say two or three words. I believe they were, "Peace, be still. Peace, be still." He had a mastery of his atmosphere. We each can do the same thing. Mary Baker Eddy determined what the science was. That's why the book is called Science and Health. She determined the science of the healings of Jesus. Unilaterally was able to declare that they were not a miracle, but they were only a demonstration of the science. Now, what do you think an important element of that science is? As a matter of fact, the very first element in priority. And we have that on our website under Heal Everything as a mandatory thing that you must address as the first step. What do you think out of all the terms that you could use to describe Jesus would be one of the most important, if not the most important? And the same term could be used to describe Mary Baker Eddy. Think about the chapter 12 on Christian Science Practice. What is the first story from the Bible that is related in chapter 12 on Christian Science Practice? It's about Mary Magdalene, a story of love and forgiveness. Of course, forgiveness is a part of love. And I just told you the answer. Love. Out of all the seven terms for God, love is the one that really stands out in describing the character of Jesus. He loved even the soldiers that came to arrest him. When Peter cut the ear off of one of them, he said, "Put up thy sword, Peter," and he healed the ear instantaneously. We have three excellent individuals that are referred to on the website. We have their writings. They're no longer with us in visible form, but we have their writings. And Joel Goldsmith is one of them. And he was called into a Christian Science nursing home. They don't use medication, but they give the needed humanitarian assistance to people that don't seem to be able to take care of themselves. And he was called there because this individual was having a problem, and they requested him to come there to assist in healing it. So he went there, and when he entered the reception room, the receptionist said, "You can't go in there. Everyone in the whole building has a contagious disease." Everyone in the whole building had a contagious disease. She said, "If you go in there, you're going to come out and have the same problem they have." He said, "How many people do you have here?" She told him it was several hundred. He said, "You only have one problem, you know. You don't have however many it was, 200 or 300, 400 people. You don't have 200 or 300, 400 problems. There's only one problem." He went over and sat down in the reception area, did what he knew how to do, to bring his thought in alignment with God as it applied to a claim of a contagious disease. Within a few minutes, the nurses started coming out from the nursing area into the lobby reception area. And they said, "What happened? What's going on here?" Everyone was healed at once. Everyone was with a contagious disease, and now everyone has perfect health. The truth is what did the healing. But Joel Goldsmith had to channel it so that it would be received by all the people that were being victimized by the false belief. Jesus was asked, I believe it was with the blind man who had been blind by birth, from birth, and his disciples asked him, "Who did sin, this man or his parents?" Because he had had this ailment since he was born. And the reply of Jesus was, "Neither did this man nor his parents sin. And the only reason we have this situation here is to glorify God." I believe he asked him if he had faith. He did that on a few occasions. And the individual said, "Yes, Lord, I have faith. I've known about your reputation, and it's a great blessing that you're here. He healed the situation. The man said, yes, I have faith that I can be healed. When Jesus healed the 10 lepers, only one of them stopped to thank him. And what did he give credit to? The truth. He recognized that the truth healed him. That's exactly what heals every time. That's probably a good reason why Mary Baker Eddy quoted Jesus as the very first quote in the entire textbook to remind us to be searching for truth. Learn it. Practice it. Okay, I will tell you now what that very important quality is that is the first one you need to learn and practice. Practice it in everything you think, say, and do. Frederick L. Rawson told us about it. He said we had one purpose in being on earth, to make other people happy. That is cultivating a life of giving. A life of giving. Not 10% of our life. When the Bible says we should tithe, do we want to be an average person? Were we a C student in school or in college or whatever your highest level of education was? Are you an average individual in whatever profession or avocation, including hobbies? Everything you do, are you just average? Or are you striving to be an example of what you should be, striving to be a perfect image and likeness of God? There's nothing average about God. Are we striving to be average? Are we striving to be the perfect image and likeness of God? It's our choice. Like the girls that were training for cross country, they weren't striving to compete and win. They were striving to perfect their performance against the perfect way to run the race. And we should do that in every single thing in which we're involved. No one can do it for us. We have to do it. We have to have the intestinal desire to be reflecting the perfection of God in everything we think, say, and do. Jesus said thinking something is the same as doing it. Wentworth Winslow received a telegram before international telephone was readily available, probably back in the 20s or 30s, 100 years ago. And the telegram said, 6 treatments, please. He didn't know how to contact the individual. He didn't even know where he was located other than that it was from South America. He was living in New York. And the only thing that came to him that he could do to be of service to the individual seeking it, or in this case it happened to be someone who was a friend of the individual that needed a healing, but the only thing he could think of to do was to consider every single thought, speech, and action all day long, and was he putting forth the effort and striving to do every single thing in thought, speech, and action in a perfect way to reflect the qualities of God? Was he doing it? He emphasized a whole new focus on it because he didn't know what else he could do. Remember, he had 15-minute appointments. He was one of the 3 mentioned. Well, he did that. And after a few days, he received another telegram, and it said, 6 more treatments, please. He didn't know what else to do but to continue what he was doing. He wasn't one to give up. He was working on a boy that had a prognosis that wasn't very good, and the boy passed on. And he kept working for that case, and he brought the boy back to life. So he has the perseverance. He wanted to be of assistance. He wanted to live a life of giving. not taking. And if Frederick L. Rosen would have been given that case, he would have started it with the phrase, "There is everything possible to God. Nothing is impossible to God." Because that's the way he mentions it in his book, in that one book. He wrote several. So that's what he did. And after a few more days went by, he got another telegram. And it said, "Everything is fine. The first six treatments were requested to heal a friend of mine who was in an insane asylum for insanity. And the first six treatments healed him. And when I sent the second one, it was because no one believed that he was healed. And so the second one was to heal all of those that had an influence on him and were in his atmosphere that couldn't believe he was healed. And so their thought was healed in the second six treatments. Our perfection that we're striving for touches everyone in our atmosphere. Those we work with, if we're in a job, our family, friends. It flows out into the atmosphere of thought, and anyone that is receptive feels the benefit from it. And that's how he healed this individual. He put his purity that he was focusing on automatically. It exudes, it radiates out into the atmosphere of thought. It's like a lighthouse. Rain or shine, fog or clear weather, the light from the lighthouse is beaming. Are we going to be a lighthouse? Are we going to be striving to be as perfect as we understand how we can be? Or are we going to be lazy? Are we going to have a model in thought that we can refer to? Are we going to be creative enough that we could create a prayer treatment on the fly? We have to start by learning the terms that describe the seven terms for God. The second definition of God is in the glossary, page 587, and it says God is the great I am, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, and eternal. Principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love. All substance, intelligence. And I already mentioned the definition of good on that same page, which was God, spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, and omniaction. And also on that, a few pages later, on page 591, is the definition of man. And it says, man is the compound idea of infinite spirit, the spiritual image and likeness of God, the full representation of mind. Think of that. We are composed of the full representation of mind. And we don't own a single quality. They're not ours, except to reflect. It's like many people using the website at the same time. It's there. The tools are there. The facility is there. The truth that is referred to by all the various writers and the prayer treatments. We have 400 prayer treatments about any topic you can imagine. They're there for anyone to use, multiple people to use at the same instant. It's like the number, any number in mathematics. There's no limit to the number of people that can use a particular number at one time. Why? Because it's an idea. Ideas don't have limitations, as do finite pieces of matter, such as money, or a house, or food, or clothing. Those are all matter-based and not idea-based unless we think of them the way we should think of them, as an idea. If we do that, we will have an infinite supply. We'll never run out of anything that we need. In fact, a common quote from the Bible is, or actually, I guess it's from Mary Baker Eddy, It says divine love always has met and always will meet every human need. Are we focusing on what God is and what man is? Think about Genesis chapter 1, beginning with verse 26. And God said, let us make man in our image and after our likeness. And then he says, so God made man in his image and after his likeness. You see, it's like the picture of Jesus knocking on the door, a very popular one. He's knocking on the door of consciousness. Are we going to open it? Are we going to open a new dimension to our future? If so, there will be no limit. No limit. This prayer treatment, which has been entirely extemporaneous, will close by reciting the diapason of heaven and let the God consciousness, the Christ consciousness, be our guide. Starting with mind is a good place to begin. This extemporaneous prayer treatment will close by reciting the original prayer by Mary Baker Eddy, Diapason of Heaven, with a focus on mind. The real Christian scientist is constantly accentuating harmony in word and deed, mentally and orally, perpetually repeating this diapason of heaven. Good is my God, and my God is good. Love is my God, and my God is love. That is the introduction placed there by Mary Baker Eddy herself, and that is a quote from Miscellaneous Writing, page 206. Following is the rest of the treatment by Mary Baker Eddy. We can declare often, divine mind is my mind, and my mind is God. God is my mind, and my mind is good. I have an intelligent mind, a good mind, a wise, perceptive, discerning mind, a clear mind, a joyous, happy mind. Mind is God, all acting, all wise, all loving, all knowing, all seeing. Divine mind is enthroned in my consciousness. Mortal mind and matter and personal sense are not enthroned. Ignorance and apathy and materiality are not enthroned in my consciousness. Good is my mind, and my mind is good. Mind is my God, and my mind is good. Divine mind is enthroned, and so forth. This is the Word of God. We have to change the subjective thinking we have of these seven names from personal sense to spiritual sense, and see ourselves and others as spiritual individualities, not personalities. This way is the only way. It is the way the Bible characters walked with God and ascended. Amen. It is Thursday, October 23, 2025, at 13:26. Thank you for listening to this extemporaneous prayer treatment on Christian Science and the System of Divine Metaphysics, with a focus on mind, with a subtitle of Action. The website is beinstitute.org or .com. The end.